You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The protests, many of them peaceful, they emerged across our state over the weekend. Milwaukee, Madison, Kenosha, Janesville, Appleton, Wausau, Green Bay, West Bend, Fond du Lac. People marched in the streets, they chanted, they confronted police. And in Madison, Milwaukee, and Green Bay, demonstrators defying curfew last night were met with pepper spray and tear gas. Did you go to a protest to express your anger and hurt? Did you help in cleaning up after looting? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. He's been covering the protests in Madison for the past two nights. Sean, welcome back.
Good morning, Kate.
So let's go back to Saturday. There was a peaceful protest at the Capitol in the afternoon, at least 1,000 people chanting, holding signs. But that turned during the night. What happened on Saturday?
So I have to tell you, I did not get downtown until closer to 7 o'clock on Saturday night. And so I wasn't there for something that our colleague Bridget Bowden covered earlier in the day, which was a lengthy peaceful protest around Madison. But the best I can tell from a combination of Twitter and talking to other reporters is that around 5 o'clock or so, a smaller group of protesters began damaging property, from city property, police cars, to private property, businesses on State Street. You saw a lot of businesses on State Street with their windows smashed out. So, you know, by the time I got there at 7 on Saturday night, State Street was just kind of one scene after another. Of you had groups of protesters that would yell at lines of police. At some point, one side or the other would... the protesters would either throw rocks and water bottles at police, and police would throw tear gas launch tear gas or pepper spray at the protest crowd. People would kind of disperse and sort of reform and do it all over again.
There was also the burning of trash. There was an abandoned police car that was on fire. What kind of destruction did you see?
Well, I mean, if you go down State Street now, you'll see it looks a lot different than the State Street that you're used to. And that is mostly boarded up at this point. There were a number of businesses that had their windows broken on Saturday night. I can tell you, though, just walking around yesterday, I saw businesses who had not yet had a broken window, from the best that I could tell. And they were also boarding up, kind of taking no chances at this point, given the way things have gone. I saw video and pictures of the burning squad car on Saturday night. I also saw another squad car, not burnt down, but, battered and spray painted, being towed away closer to downtown. So, the thing with an event like this is you can only be in one place at one time, and it was really spread out, and so you get to see pieces of it.
Did you find any indication that there were certain businesses that seemed to suffer more damage than others?
If you have glass windows, I could not tell that it was really specifically
based on
targeted at one, like the type of business necessarily. I mean, there was a jeweler that had windows broken. I mean, there were businesses that had, what you would know to have be valuable things inside that had windows broken, but there was also, a resale shop on State, stuff like that. So I don't think that it was necessarily the type of business that was, leading to broken windows.
Sean Johnson is with us, Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief, as we look at weekend protests that turned violent in Madison over the weekend over the death of George Floyd. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Sean, how did police respond on Saturday night?
I would say, for the most part, when I was there, every police officer that I saw by that point on Saturday night was wearing riot gear. So they've got helmets, shields over their faces, respirators, so that when a tear gas canister is launched, they can still remain in the vicinity. And they would basically stand there and kind of hold their ground. You did not see arrests Saturday night. I mean, I think Madison reported 3 arrests from Saturday night, and basically were taking the approach of, you know, when you see what was happening Saturday night and you see 3 arrests, obviously their approach was to not arrest. There was nobody getting, you know, I don't want to say nobody because I can't be every place at all times. What I saw, there was no officer like hitting people, no billy clubs out or anything like that in Madison, Wisconsin on Saturday.
You were in the scene for most of the night, well past midnight. How did Saturday end?
Eventually, you know, on the block that I was at, there was kind of a standoff. This was at Johnson and State, was a corner that a lot of people kind of camped for maybe a couple hours, maybe a few hours. And, you know, you sort of had these movements where people would get up close to police. Sometimes the yelling would get intense, and then police would use pepper spray or tear gas, back people up. It would kind of repeat. At some point in the night, after there hadn't been one of those incidents for a while, the crowd started to thin. There was this trash fire that was in the middle of Johnson Street that was kind of behind the crowd. That kind of smoldered. And eventually the crowd decided they'd had enough. They marched down Johnson Street, and almost instantly the police line broke up and you had traffic again.
Let's take a call. Brian is with us from Delavan. Hi, Brian.
Good morning. I heard about the plastic bottles filled with gasoline in the bushes. I'm not sure if that happened in Madison, but this is being organized by anarchists that are trying to create major damage to our cities.
Brian, thank you for the call. Sean, do we know who is doing the looting?
Well, I mean, you've got a variety of people out there. As I said, most of the protests on Saturday, the people who walked around Madison ahead of this protested peacefully. A lot of them, you could see, immediately disavowed what was happening Saturday night. You had other people who were very comfortable in that atmosphere with the tear gas kind of flying. They'd get tear gassed. They'd go, somebody would dump milk on their face, on their eyes to reduce the sensation, and then they'd be kind of back in the thick of it. And then you had other people who were just kind of there. I mean, it was quite a sensation. Like, there were people that just kind of watching from the background, and they too would take off running when tear gas would fly and then kind of come back in the thick of it. So I can't, it's hard to say, like, here is the type of person you saw on State Street on Saturday night, because you saw a lot of people.
Sean Johnson, WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. He's been covering the protests in Madison over the weekend. What questions do you have about these demonstrations? Were you there? What was your experience like? How are you feeling about what is going on? Time to talk. There's room for you at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with WPR's Sean Johnson right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the protests that turned violent at night over the weekend. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson was on the streets around the Capitol in Madison throughout the weekend. Were you there as well? What do you think of the messages, the images? How do you feel about the death of George Floyd? There's time to talk. 800-642-1234. And WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is our guide. Sean, shifting to Sunday, Madison Mayor Satya Rose Conway put a 9:30 curfew in place and called out the National Guard. What happened with the Guard?
The Guard did not come out until late. And on Sunday, I can give you a kind of a better idea of how it evolved because I was there for the whole thing really since about, 4:30 or 5 in the afternoon when it was just a handful of people and pretty sleepy, really, to watching it build and watching how it eventually ended. Until around 9:30 or so, up until around 10 o'clock, the protest, which was about 300 people by that point, was just marching back and forth on State Street between the Capitol and campus. And they would also march around the Capitol Square on the streets. And that's what it was. They would stop for speeches sometimes. They grew a little larger and certainly more animated as we got closer to that curfew time. But it was about 10 o'clock. You had an incident on part of the square where some of the Madison police who had been watching in their regular uniforms, they didn't have the helmets or the gear on. The group of protesters came over there. And, all I can tell you is that it was an intense confrontation. From my vantage point, I couldn't see what it looked like up in the front of the crowd, but it was pretty intense. And those police were, and it was a handful of police at that point, they were in a position where, because of the way that the building entrance that they were standing in front of kind of moved back beyond the sidewalk, they were a little bit trapped in by this crowd. So more police came in at that point, again, not wearing riot gear. And after that is when you saw the massive police force move in and you saw the tear gas canisters start to fly. At some point after that, and I don't even know precisely when they arrived, but you saw the National Guard come in and you would have like a huge line of police in the front and then National Guard behind them. It sometimes they would join and you just have this massive line of law enforcement and National Guard.
Like a wall?
And it was like, yeah, very aptly described as a wall because they were shoulder to shoulder basically. And they had these big plastic shields. You weren't getting through there for sure.
Yeah. And at what point did they start walking toward protesters, pushing them back?
Well, it was at that point, essentially, once the police in riot gear came out, they were telling protesters there's a curfew and telling them to leave. Protesters would, they would get up close to the officers, sometimes kneel, sometimes put their hands up. They were, very vocal, but at times from time to time, pepper spray would come out, tear gas would come out, people would move. Eventually, this kind of massive combination of police and soldiers pushed a lot of the crowd down Wisconsin Avenue on the Capitol, shooting out from the Capitol there on the Isthmus. And then it kind of moved into residential neighborhood. And then you've got this huge, slow moving police force, basically, that is kind of just gradually pushing this crowd out. And the crowd is dispersing. And they're in smaller ways. They're in this neighborhood, in that neighborhood. I didn't see it personally, but I did see on social media a literal dumpster fire on a nearby block or on the Isthmus. And so then it was really chaotic at that point.
We're talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief. Let's take a call. Dan in New Berlin. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Well, I have a question about, like, the leaders in charge. I read it was the mayor of Hudson that wrote a letter, I think, to the Governor Evers about 70 to 75,000 paid actors on their way up to Minnesota coming through Wisconsin, as if 75,000 people are going to stop in a town of 10,000 and cause riots. But where is this junk coming from? Like, why are the people in charge saying there are all these paid actors? Like, where is any proof of any of this?
Dan, thanks for the call. Sean, how would you respond to that?
All I can say is there is a definite disconnect in the crowd between some people who want to break windows and some people who want to demonstrate. I mean, there's a definite disconnect there. The crowd last night that was going around the Capitol, you would hear every now and then, this was before things got really crazy, but you'd hear every now and then something kind of ping off of one of the glass storefronts or building fronts around the Capitol Square. And, you know, you don't know what it is, but you do become very aware at times like this that there are little rocks just all over the city, basically, just kind of sitting around on the ground. When that would happen and you'd hear this ping off of a glass, the crowd would shout, like, don't do that. Okay, so that's where a lot, I would say most of the crowd was at, was don't instigate that. But, you know, once the chaos ensues, it's hard to keep track of who's who.
The protests took place all around the state capitol, and yet the capitol was untouched. Why do you think that was?
There is a statue on the State Street side that had graffiti damage. I did see one small window on the Capitol that had a plywood board, you know, covering an opening there. So, you know, I don't know. The Capitol is, the Capitol grounds are a huge place. You become really aware of that at a time like this, that the Capitol Square itself is very large. I don't know. I mean, Saturday night, all the focus was on State Street. That is where the crowd was. That's where the chaos was. Sunday night, it was a smaller crowd and a very large police force. There was just, I couldn't see any damage to the Capitol. People just weren't gathering up there by the building.
How is the governor responding, reacting?
Yeah, he authorized the use of the National Guard, of course, on Sunday, which is not a small step. He did it at the request of Madison's mayor, he said. He has in his statements been sympathetic to protesters and to the plight of Black America. In terms of what he has done, that is certainly something that he is the governor did is to authorize National Guard at the request of Madison's mayor after the property damage that took place on Saturday night.
These protests, they are taking place in the middle of a pandemic. Did you see signs that the protesters were at all concerned about social distancing or wearing masks?
This is, again, something I talked to our colleague Bridget Bowden about when she covered the peaceful protest Saturday during the day, which was a larger group of people. She said there was a real effort to exercise caution. I don't know if social distancing would be that, but people had masks. Pretty much everybody had masks, she said, and they were giving away masks to people that didn't have them. In the scenes that I've watched, some people have masks. A lot of people don't have masks, and social distancing is not happening, not at all. So for those of you who've been getting used to kind of staying 6 feet or so away from other people, it would not be a comfortable place for you at these things, because social distancing is just not at all happening.
Is there any indication a curfew is in place tonight in Madison?
There is a curfew in place tonight in Madison. This is something that they announced as part of their initial curfew announcement on Saturday night. that it would be in place. And so I don't have the hours right in front of me right now, kind of scrolling, looking for them as I talk to you here. But yeah. I do know that there will be a curfew in place again tonight.
Do you expect more protests tonight?
I don't know what to expect. You know, I will tell you, I thought Saturday night, I was immediately thinking, boy, we might have to go to Milwaukee to back up our reporters there, because just watching what's happening around the country and knowing sort of the history of Milwaukee and the issues that city faces, I assumed that might be where things happened. So obviously it escalated pretty quickly in Madison, and you've had a couple nights of incidents. I'm just going to say, I don't know what will happen tonight.
Sean, thank you for your reporting.
You're welcome.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. You can follow his reporting on Twitter at SJohnsonWPR. What do you want to say about the riots across America? How do you want to see communities address racial and economic unrest? What does healing look like? 800-642-1234. We'll be back after this news update on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're looking back at the weekend protests on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we were talking to Sean Johnson there, just a quick update. There is not currently a curfew in Madison tonight. The state of emergency is in effect in Madison until Wednesday. It will be considered by the Common Council at its meeting tomorrow. As protests escalated, turned violent Saturday, one nonprofit leader in Madison sprang into action, calling for volunteers to show up yesterday and help clean and start to repair downtown, also setting up a fund to raise money for small business owners. Were you one of the hundreds of volunteers who helped clean up? Where did you go to lend a hand? We're at 800-642-1234. Michael Johnson is CEO of the Dane County Boys and Girls Club. Michael, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Kate.
How do you feel about what you see going on across America and here in Wisconsin?
I got to tell you, I'm hurt. I'm speechless. And, you know, I watched my wife cry the other day while she was watching this on the news. I watched family members and friends of mine who are traumatized by seeing, you know, what happened to George Floyd. Here is a brother that cried out 12 times as he gasped for his last breath and lost consciousness and died at the hands of what I would call systemic racism. We've seen this before with Eric Gardner in 2014, when he struggled to say those same words, "I cannot breathe," and the outcome was no indictment. And so I'm tired, worn down. And when you see these kinds of things continue to happen in the United States, it's just heartbreaking, and it's devastating, and it's traumatizing. And I'm just, I have just prayed a lot these last couple of weeks to figure out how I could lend a constructive hand with trying to build a bridge to seek justice for George Floyd's family, but at the same time ensure that we don't burn our city down or we tear down our businesses. I just don't think that's the route or the direction that our country should go in.
Have you been out at the peaceful protests?
I have not. You know, one of the things that I am concerned about is being around, you know, large crowds. You see the number of people who are dying from, you know, the coronavirus. I have been in hundreds of marches, and it took a lot of discipline for me not to, you know, go out there. But somebody who's 44 years of age, African-American, and seeing people that I know who have died from this virus, I'm going to avoid very, very large crowds until I feel comfortable being in a setting like that.
You've been a leading voice calling for change after police shootings have occurred again and again. What changes do you want to see?
You know, so I've talked about this. I called a meeting, and some people, you know, criticized me. After I watched that, you know, that video, I immediately issued a challenge to all of the police chiefs in our county, in Dane County, and I would encourage people from across the state to do the same thing, is that when these incidents happen, sometimes our leaders in law enforcement don't necessarily speak out. So I challenged all of our police chiefs to condemn the actions of these officers. And I am somebody who worked very, very closely with law enforcement, and sometimes I get criticized from my community for doing so. So we held a town hall meeting, and we brought on six or seven of our local police chiefs and asked them to condemn these actions. But I also wanted to walk away with some takeaways that people could follow up on. And one, I think every municipality in Wisconsin should have a meeting with the police chief and the president of their board, and include their local mayor to look at their use of force policies and make sure that those policies have been reviewed from an equitable lens. Two, that they continue to support peaceful protests, to have town hall meetings and discussions, because I believe those are therapeutic. However, many times we have these kinds of events and there's no outcomes, and there's no resources to execute on those outcomes. So our philanthropic community, our business community, have to be a part of those conversations. And then three, demanding policy changes and investing in long-term programs to eradicate the disparities in education, health, employment, and incarceration. We've been talking about these issues in Wisconsin for 50 years, and it is time for us to address these issues. The fourth one is I'm issuing a challenge to our nonprofits and to our schools to not be afraid to create targeted programs for Black families who are traumatized by these kinds of incidents, and to make sure that Black families are getting mental health services, and not being afraid to create specialized programming to be able to support those families. And then the fifth one is something that I'm working on with leaders across this country as somebody who has raised money for Tony Robinson's family, Michael Brown's family. I just had my Avery's mother here in Wisconsin on a conference with teenagers and raised money for her daughter to finish her master's degree. Every time there's an issue like this, these families are traumatized. They don't have legal fees to support addressing these kinds of issues. And I believe we need in every state a fund that could support families as they go through these kinds of incidents.
We're talking with Michael Johnson. He's CEO of the Dane County Boys and Girls Club. You can join in 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Martha now in Menominee. Hi, Martha.
Hi, good morning. Conversation 50 years too late, I guess, but better late than never. I have two suggestions. When these incidences turn into lawsuits and the families of these unarmed Black men bring lawsuits, a way to curtail the police abuses is to force these lawsuits to be paid out of the police union pension fund. This would force the police to realize that they're all in this together, and they have to work together to prevent these actions from happening. When they have to pay out of their own pockets these settlements, then things will start to change. My second suggestion is that when these cases are prosecuted against the police, instead of using the district attorney or the prosecutor's office, there needs to be a special prosecutor brought in, just like we do in federal cases. And the reason for that is that the district attorneys have too much of an incestuous relationship with the police. They work with them every day to prosecute cases. Then when these lawsuits come up and these cases are prosecuted where the police engage in let's call it legalized lynching.
Martha, I want to pause there. Michael, what do you think of appointing special prosecutors to review investigations of death involving officers?
Well, she is spot on. I can't even add any additional commentary to that. I love her thinking. I think she is spot on. She is right. A lot of the district attorneys do have relationships with, you know, local law enforcement officials. And, you know, you look at the case of George Floyd, you know, there was three other cops right there that pretty much condoned that behavior. And I think that when these things happen, everybody has to have financial skin in the game. So I actually like those recommendations.
Let's look at the relief effort you've organized in Madison on Sunday. Hundreds of people have volunteered cleaning up downtown. What are you doing in that effort?
Yeah, so I wanted to send a message while I will always support protests and peaceful protests and believe that people's voices should be heard, but at the same time, I just cannot condone people looting, cannot condone people breaking into businesses. And when I look at our businesses downtown, over 50% of our businesses are owned by women and minority-owned businesses. Over 70% of those businesses are people who live in our local county. So I just decided that, hey, once the sun comes up at 5 a.m., I put out a message on my Facebook page and said, I need 100 people to come and help me clean up downtown, and 3,000 people signed up. I also wanted to make sure that we provided some financial relief to those businesses, because a lot of these businesses, some have insurance, some don't. Those who do have insurance under some of their policies may not cover some of the incidents that occurred. So we put out a goal to raise $50,000, and we've already raised about another, I think we raised about $150,000 so far, and I want to try to raise $200,000 by the end of the day, so we can get immediate relief to those businesses who have always supported our work, our local nonprofits. And I think it's time for our nonprofits and those who have the means to be able to support our small businesses.
What are some of the things the volunteers were doing yesterday?
So yesterday we removed graffiti. There were the city cannot go into private property, so our volunteers went in, you know, to one, remove graffiti, to sweep up broken glass. There was debris, you know, up and down the street. So we had volunteers picking that stuff up. And then we went into stores to just sweep and to clean, just to provide as much relief as we could. And I'm just thankful, you know, that so many people, you know, showed up. Now, the criticism I'm getting is, you know, why do this? Why not just burn this place down? And I've seen this happen in Baltimore. I've seen this happen, you know, in other cities. And it has taken years for those cities to rebuild.
We have to pause there with Michael Johnson, back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Protesters marched in the streets again yesterday across the U.S. and here in Wisconsin communities, calling for reforms after the death of George Floyd, an unarmed African-American man who died in police custody in Minneapolis on Memorial Day. In Madison, the police presence expanded late last night to include the National Guard. They stood in a tight line behind Madison officers who held riot shields. Do you think the protests will spark lasting change? What do you think needs to be done to address the rage many people are feeling right now? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. We have Michael Johnson, CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County, who stays with us. Let's take a call now. James is joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, James.
Hi, great show there. Really liked the idea from that previous caller about paying settlements out of the pension fund, because my dad was a police officer for 30 years. I was a police officer for 15 years before I went into a different field because I wanted to help people. And that's my point, is we go into policing because we want to help people. And I got out because I got so jaded because I heard the same story over and over. You know, I can't count how many times I heard I can't breathe from somebody who was just yelling at me. And if you can yell, you can breathe. And you get jaded, and so you don't listen to the real because you heard the fake so many times. And now I work with people who want help, and I developed a way to deal with people. And I would say to myself, okay, I can help people as much as they want help. And the community needs to want that help, and it has to, you know, do it at the very basic level from mother to child, father to child, because a police officer goes into the same household two and three generations and tries to help, but then eventually realizes, I can't help.
James, thanks. Michael Johnson, your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think you can find that in any community, right? And so there are, I'm just going to let the data, you know, speak for itself. When you look at, you know, the achievement gap in the United States, you know, Wisconsin has the largest racial achievement gap, you know, in the United States. And there are, you know, families who need help, some who don't want help, but I think you can find that in any community. I also don't think that it's responsible to assume and stereotype that an entire race of people are like that, right? And I'm not making the assumption that he's saying that, but sometimes what I find is that people have these stereotypes towards a certain class of people. And when I think about the kids that go to my Boys and Girls Clubs, you know, a lot of these young men and women are underemployed, but there's a perception that they're welfare queens, and that's far from the case. And so what we need to do is invest more money, you know, and resources into our public schools to make sure that our kids are graduating. When you have some schools where kids can't read, can't write, not reading that proficiency, African-American, Latino kids graduating at 60-something percent, that's unacceptable. And then when they're not graduating from high school and going on to college, that's when you begin to have challenges, you know, in the community. I can tell you there are numbers, like we're putting 100 kids to work this summer, even during this pandemic. Our young people need to be exposed to opportunities. We need to be investing in training programs to ensure that people can economically take care of themselves and give back to their community.
Michael, you said something there. How do we talk with our kids right now about what's going on?
You know, I think, I just had a conversation with my son, who is now almost 6 feet tall, you know, 200 pounds, starting to be looked very, he's very athletic, and I worry, you know, about him. And so I have had to have, you know, conversations with my own son. And I think that we have to have conversations with our kids, sit them down, let them know what's going on in this country. So I've tried to do that. Just 2 weeks ago, I brought together kids from Wisconsin. I brought together kids in Brunswick, Georgia. I asked Ahmaud Avery's mother, who was the young man who was killed in Brunswick, brought his sister and his mother on a town hall meeting to talk to young people and to allow their voices to be heard and to let them share their frustration because they are also traumatized. And for those who might live in more, I would say, influential communities, middle class and upper class communities, seek understanding instead of being understood. Reach out to a person of color or somebody that's African-American and understand what they're going through. Now, my challenge would be don't go be an investigative reporter, right? Because sometimes Black folks get tired of, you know, sharing what their issues are, what their challenges are, and particularly Black leaders. I get asked all the time, what should we do? We know what we need to do. We've been talking about these issues for 50-plus years. And where the rubber meets the road that we seem to fail is coming up with the systemic funding to systemically address these systemic issues.
We're speaking with community leader Michael Johnson, who's been organizing residents to help clean up downtown Madison, working with police on what the future looks like for policing in the Madison area and Dane County. And want to hear from you, 800-642-1234. Michael, when you look at the gear the police were wearing during these protests, the tear gas, how do you think that police departments have become too militarized?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it, but I understand it. So the lieutenant governor called me yesterday and had, you know, briefed me on, you know, why they were sending the National Guard down. In some cases, you know, you had an officer that was hurt, you know, in Madison, and when folks are throwing bricks and rocks, you know, at law enforcement, it's unacceptable. And so they have to, you know, protect themselves. At the same time, I also think that we need to show empathy. And if there's a way that we can protest in peace and law enforcement can be a part of those activities, I think it sends the right message. But I also understand that when people start throwing things, you know, at officers, we don't want to see, I have a great deal of respect for humanity. And I would ask those who are protesting, and for the, let me just be clear, the people who organized the protest in Madison, it was a peaceful protest with a beautiful sea of Wisconsin nights that I was proud of. And then it turned into what I saw, a small group of agitators that came in and wanted to create civil unrest. And I was the first one to say, lock them all up. So if you are coming into our state, if you're coming into our city, and you're burning down our targets and our small businesses, and you are putting cars on fire, you deserve to go to jail. And you should not be using the name of George Floyd and his family to commit crimes.
Well,
can't embrace or support that.
Let's bring in Jerry in Milwaukee. Jerry, hi.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Gordon for all his work. He's right there on the front lines. And if you could reiterate where we could help you in the state, where we could send something to help you in your efforts in Madison.
Jerry, thank you. Michael Johnson, how can people help? Where should they go?
Yeah, so we're trying to raise money to organize. So www.bgcdc.org, so the Boys and Girls, if you just Google the Boys and Girls Clubs of Dane County website and hit the donate page. We're trying to raise $200,000 to support these small businesses. We've raised $135,000 so far. And so go to Boys and Girls Clubs of Dane County. All you have to do is Google it and just put care of, you know, relief efforts, or we're helping families during COVID. And so whatever you want to restrict it for, we'll honor what those restrictions are. But right now we're raising money to support those downtown businesses.
Michael, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me, Kate.
Michael Johnson, CEO of the Dane County Boys and Girls Club. Earlier, we talked with WPR's Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson. Just ahead, it is On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.